go to the moon in this decade and do the other things. Not because they are easy, but because they are hard. Because that goal will serve to organize and measure the best of our energies and skills. Because that challenge is one that we're willing to accept, one we are unwilling to postpone, and one we intend to win.
Welcome, everyone, to the next episode of Deep Space High, a sci-fi podcast where we break down the latest and maybe not so greatest episodes from today's sci-fi TV. I'm Jedi Master Steve.
And I'm Sky Marshal Chris.
So what the hell's going on?
Not much. You know what? I'm really glad that we're using Disney Plus and not CBS All Access anymore. Don't have to deal with the commercials. You don't have to deal with cutting out at terrible times. It's just nice, easy. I get to watch Mandalorian and enjoy the episode.
Right? That's been a blessing.
I know, right?
So glad we're through with that.
Yep.
At least unless another sci-fi show comes out on that damn thing. I don't know. I guess maybe Picard Season 2.
Yeah, I wonder how many seasons they're going to do for that show.
I don't know. Or Discovery. I mean, we could always cover that, but...
Oh, yeah. Discovery's going to be coming out soon, too.
So we'll see. We'll see how Star Trek'd out we get, and we'll try to hit some of these other shows, too.
Oh, yeah. We're going to be hitting a lot of different podcasts, a lot of different sci-fi shows here in the next couple of weeks. So,
well, in the next couple of weeks, we'll be stuck with Mandalorian, I would say, over the next coming months.
Okay, over the next coming months, then.
We're only on episode 3 of Mandalorian, so we still have 5 more weeks of this.
Yeah, I mean, it'll go by faster than we think.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. Well, let's go ahead and get into this episode.
You can do it! You can do it all night long!
Yeah, sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Okay, man, let's do it!
I mean, come on, I just don't see a problem here. Let's just do it!
I'm gonna go do it!
What are we watching?
We're watching Mandalorian, Episode 3, The Sin. I wonder what the sin one was. Well, I mean, the episode's named The Sin. What's the sin?
Oh, I think we find out pretty quickly, and we say opening scene. Let's talk about the opening, 15 minutes of the episode?
Pretty much. I mean, because I don't know if that's 15 minutes. It's pretty much the first half of the episode.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good reference point. Because, you know, he lands, you see Baby Yoda kind of curious with all the different species through the market. Mm-hmm. And he makes it to the client, which I think that's Werner Herzog's character's name. So we could, pretty safe to say he doesn't have a name. It's just going to be the client.
All right. Well, I guess we'll stick with the client then. Yeah, but even before that, because I think you skipped a little bit, you got Apollo Creed. What was his name again in the show?
Greef Karga.
Greef Karga does a little holo message, you know, letting him know to return to the client and deliver it straight to the client.
Yes.
And then Baby Yoda's being just, you know, as adorable as he fucking can. Mm-hmm. And where was I going with this?
Well, the main thing that happens in this first half of the episode is Mando gets to the client. He delivers Baby Yoda to the client and they take him over. You know, they run some mandible scans. The doctor's like, yeah, he checks out. He looks good. Looks healthy. And Baby Yoda, you could see, is visibly upset. And he's like, no, I don't want to go with these people.
Mm-hmm.
I want to stick with Mando.
Yeah, he gets kind of attached to Mando.
Yeah, real quick, too. And I'm kind of surprised how quickly he becomes attached. But I guess when, you know, Mando saved his life several times already, so.
Yeah, that's true. And he's 50 years old. And just because he's a baby doesn't mean he's not, you know, cognitive of what's going on. He's just still a baby.
Yeah, I was thinking about it, and I don't know how much of a baby he is. He's walking. Because last episode we brought up the whole life of his species.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we said Yoda was 900 years old when he died, so I thought, well, maybe 10 years is 1 year to the baby, but I was like, well, that would make him 5, and he just doesn't seem like a 5-year-old.
No, he doesn't. So he but could be smarter than, you know, everybody's giving him credit for. He's just still a child.
Yeah, and it's one of those things. It's hard to gauge. I imagine he's somewhere between, like, 3 and 5, because he's obviously aware of what's going on with the Force. He's obviously able to walk and, you know, get out of his floating bassinet pretty easily. It's just, you know, like the IG unit said in the first episode, species develop at different pace. So this is one that, you know, obviously Yoda species can live centuries, almost the whole millennium.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it might be one of those things where he's looks like a child, but more advanced or not as advanced. And it's just, there's not a lot of information on this species. Thanks, George Lucas, because he did that on purpose.
He just wanted to be an asshole.
Well, he wanted to keep the species a mystery. I mean, there's only, besides Baby Yoda, you only see this species twice in Yoda. And then in episode one, there's another Jedi Council member named Yaddle, who is of the same species.
Don't forget the video games. Knights of the Old Republic, they had their own species.
Yeah, they're not officially canon, so I'm just thinking movies, TV show.
Bullshit, they're not officially canon. They're doing the Old Republic, or they're doing a movie series on it, the Old Republic.
Okay, if they're doing a movie series on it, they're doing a movie series on it. But until the movie series comes out, it's not canon, quote-unquote.
I'm sticking with it's canon. Or at least I'm sticking with it.
You might be headcanon for you, but TV and movie-wise, those are the only three of those species that we've seen.
So. Well, moving on, Mando gets paid, and he starts breaking some rules by asking questions, which apparently you're not supposed to do in the guild, but he made a shit ton of Beskar on this deal.
Yeah, and that's kind of where he starts to quote-unquote sin, because he asked the question, what are you going to do with it?
Now, was the sin asking the question, what are you going to do with it? Or was the sin turning over Baby Yoda?
I'm thinking the sin, because of how the episode plays out. Mando, you know, as a bounty hunter, you don't discuss what the person's going to do with the bounty. Your job is to take the commission, which is accepting the bounty. You go and get them, bring them back, you get paid, that's it, no questions asked. And like the client says, now you're to forget about it.
What are your plans for it?
How uncharacteristic of one of your reputation. You have taken both commission and payment. Is it not the code of the guild that these events are now forgotten?
Yeah, but you also gotta keep, you have to have at least a moral compass, and he's handing over an infant to the Empire who has every other bounty hunter that he has run into has tried to kill this baby. So, you know, they gotta have some semblance of a moral conscience that, you know, it's morally wrong to do that. And that's where you get the sin from.
That's where we see the inner conflict with the Mandalorian, because after he delivers Baby Yoda to the client, he goes back to the cantina, meets with Greef Karga. He gets a new bounty, and he's going to go on his way to the next mission. And then, you know, he gets to his ship, gets in the cockpit, ready to take off, realizes the little knobs off that Baby Yoda was trying to play with, instantly regrets it, and goes and tries to rescue him. So while the moral compass plays into it, the sin is he is not supposed, because he asked the question twice. He asked the question to the client and to Greef Karga, what are they going to do with it? And that's when Greef Karga is like, it's against, you know, we can't ask those questions. We don't ask those questions.
Right. Which, you know, normally I figured, okay, no big deal. I get that code. But again, dealing with kids, you know, you think in Guardians of the Galaxy, what's their one rule that they break? We don't deal in kids. So, I mean, you would think that the Mandalorians would have that kind of code of maybe dealing with kids is a no-no.
Well, and that's where you see he gets the warden. He goes back and rescues him. He's like, well, he's just a child.
Yeah.
So yes, his bounty hunter job is like, okay, it's a job. He completed the job, and now his moral code kicks in.
Right.
And because we're talking about moral code, we ended up skipping over an entirely important section and scene of the episode.
Yeah, so let's go back to that important section and scene of the episode. We actually find out a bit more about the Great Purge. So one of the things that they bring up a lot in this episode is that there's no more Empire. And Mando is questioning throughout this entire episode, okay, these guys worked with the Empire. They're still wearing Stormtrooper uniforms. They're still with all the logos. Something's going on. But everybody's insisting the Empire's gone. maybe we're starting to set up something a few seasons down to where, you know, maybe we're starting to see the remnants of the First Order.
Could be. Yeah, very well could be. Because in the conversation that he has with Karga, he mentions that they're Imperials. What are they, you know, Mando's like, what are they doing here? Karga's like, well, it is what it is. If you don't like it, go to the core, which is the inner part of the galaxy where the New Republic is, and let him know. And that's when we find out how Mando feels about the New Republic, because he calls it, it's a joke.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I mean, a lot of people think or found the New Republic as a joke, or at least in the movies, in the First Order. The First Order, they nobody really took the Republic serious on any planet that they were on, or in general for the new movies. So I think it kind of shows in this one that it, you know, nobody ever really respected the New Republic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it seemed like.
So
now that the Empire is gone, no one's ruling by fear. And I think that fear, you know, might have, I don't know, became the new norm, since the Empire was there for the 19 years between 3 and 4, and then the additional, so like 25 years.
That would still have generations that would remember the old Republic. Or, well, the Republic, I guess.
Yeah.
No, it's not the old Republic, because the old Republic's supposed to be, you know what I mean.
Yeah, the Republic.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we also skipped over another scene where when Mando gets paid, the first thing he does is go back to the armorer in his Mandalorian stronghold, and he has new armor crafted for him.
Yeah. And well, when you get that much Beskar, I mean, you can build a whole new fucking armor.
Yeah, and that's where you brought up a couple minutes ago that one of the other Mandalorians points out that this Beskar is from the Siege of Mandalore and from the Great Purge.
Now, here's what confused me, though. Because if you look on the Beskar, they have Imperial stamps on the metal. And if it was taken from the Great Purge, you know, we got a flashback as they're constructing the armor for this scene. And apparently in the Great Purge, it was the Separatist army that was the one who was responsible for it, not the Empire.
No.
Okay, well, there were battle droids in that flashback, so you're going to have to explain that to me.
Okay. Senor Stoned. So when they're talking about the Great Purge, the Imperial emblem was the Imperial Navy and Army and whatever that went to Mandalore, seized the Beskar mines, and started pulling all the steel out. And these little bricks were smelted in a Empire smelting facility or whatever, and then stamped with the Empire logo. Now, while the flashback is happening, while they're creating his new armor, it's Mando's flashback. It's not the Great Purge flashback.
Well, I thought that was the Great Purge.
No. It's two different things. This is referring. The flashback
Well, that's
is
just confusing.
No, it's only confusing. Yeah, I got it. I understood it, especially from the first episode where they also had a similar flashback. It's the same.
Yeah, but they did that in the same conversation around the Great Purge, and then they just got into a fight about the Great Purge, and then they have a flashback about it, about a bunch of their people as a kid getting shot and killed by, you know, droids. So I'm thinking, okay, this is the Great Purge.
No, in the flashback, there's no Mandalorians there. You don't see any Mandalorians. It's just a bunch of people being overrun by super battle droids, and they're under attack from the Separatist army. From there, this is the flashbacks is how the Mandalorian ended up as an orphan. Parents killed in the Clone Wars because of this attack. This isn't a flashback to the Great Purge. So while, yes, they did him and I call him Big Boy Mando because it's like a someone almost twice the size of Mando, get into a fight about it. It's the flashback is not, it's a personal flashback on the character of the Mandalorian.
So then he's not a Mandalorian. He's just somebody who follows the practice.
Yes, because he says in episode 1, I was a foundling. And then in episode 1, we kind of said, well, the foundlings are like when a Mandalorian discovers a child who's kind of been orphaned and they take him under their wing and bring him into their family and teach him the ways of the Mandalorian. That's what a foundling is. Someone who is not from Mandalore, but it's brought in by a Mandalorian and learns the ways.
Okay, well, wouldn't that be pretty much everybody then? If the Great Purge wiped out pretty much all of the Mandalorians?
No, the Great Purge is not wiping out the Mandalorians. The Great Purge is the purging of Beskar steel.
then what happened to their numbers? Because even in the discussion of the big Mandalorian, whatever the fuck his name you call it, sorry for the language, he was talking about how their superiority used to be in their numbers, and now their numbers are pretty much gone, and he blames the Empire. So I'm assuming that the Empire had wiped out all of the or majority of their population, and that's why they were in hiding.
Maybe. I mean, there's not a lot of canon detail on the Great Purge. I've did some research. There's some legends where it's essentially Empire went in, tried to seize the planet, or seize the planet, took over a lot of their mines for Beskar, and then I guess conflicts ensued, and so the numbers of the Mandalorians dwindled. Now, it could be a similar situation for this TV show. It could be just...
Because that's what I was thinking would make sense, because, you know, think of it, the Mandalorians, as like bringing into our context, almost like the Jewish community. You have people who are ethnically Jews, but the Jew, but you also have practicing Jews who practice faith, and you don't have to be ethnically a Jew to practice Judaism or a religion. You know, that's why I was kind of thinking maybe it's a similar with Mandalorian, to where Mandalorians used to be a people and they didn't have all the armor, but they had like a religious practice to where if you follow the faith, these are the rules, you abide by the rules. And that's what they were doing. And that's why they keep saying I'm a Mandalorian. Weapons are part of my religion. What if it's not necessarily, he's not necessarily Mandalorian, but he just adopted the religion of Mandalorian, air quotes religion.
That's what I was telling you a couple minutes ago. That's what I was saying. That's what foundlings are.
Yeah, but you kind of did it in a confusing manner. Or at least from... Didn't really answer my question kind of the way I was hoping it would.
You no, because I mean? My exact words were... Foundlings were pretty much orphans that a Mandalorian would discover and take under their wing and teach them the ways of the Mandalorian.
But what I was saying was, what if there's no more Mandalorians left and it's just... whatever's left of the population is just foundlings. There are no more Mandalorians left.
Well, that's the thing, because in the conversation of this episode and in these scenes we're talking about, and even in episode one, he says, I was a foundling, and the armorer's like, I know. Like, there's no distinction. If it was all foundlings, then they wouldn't have that specific distinction. She also says the foundlings are the future. So yes, they are limited on the number of actual Mandalorians who came from Mandalore, and their only way they're going to grow and continue to thrive, or, you know, build a foothold and a presence within this universe, is with the foundlings.
Interesting.
So that's why I'm thinking, no, they're not. It's not all foundlings. There's got to be some true blooded Mandalorians, but the foundlings are the future. So it's them going out and, you know, taking orphans under their wings and expanding their numbers.
Yeah, I mean, like, it could be. I mean, that would make sense.
So, but I think that's enough talking about the foundlings. Let's get into a pretty intense discussion or conversation.
It's kind of the point of the show, is to get into these detailed conversations.
That's the new point of the show. It wasn't that way with Picard. I mean, maybe it was a little bit, but...
Yeah. There wasn't as much, you know, back and forth.
Yeah, well...
I guess let's move on a little bit. So he gets his new armor, and it's pretty badass.
I mean, it's pretty cool, but, you know, even the armor said it. She's like, I can make you a full cuirass, which is just, I guess, all new armor. But she's like, you're gonna stick out like a sore thumb. Well, why can't you throw some non-glossy metals or paint it a little bit so he doesn't stick out like a sore thumb? Why has he got to be like a freaking walking mirror?
Well, I mean, I noticed that while she went, like, right when she finished and she smashed up the mold, that the metal was already super shiny and glossy. So I think it's just naturally, you know, or it just naturally comes out like that.
Well, yeah, I think it is. If it is, and another thing I was, when I was doing my research, and I think it's in Legends, which, for those who don't know, Legends is what the Star Wars community calls non-canon. Just throwing that out there for anyone who might be confused by it. So, yes, the 100% Beskar will come out this polished silver color, but armorers of Mandalore would mix this with other metals, creating alloys that are still strong as 100% Baskar without using as much Baskar, and it would change the color of the armor. So I'm thinking she could have maybe mixed some other metals in there. Maybe just go over and spray it a nice little gunmetal gray. That way it's, you know, he doesn't stick out like a sore thumb. Don't get me wrong, the suit's dope. I like it. But if he didn't want to stick out like a sore thumb, they should paint it or something.
Well, you know, he's pretty quiet and reserved, but maybe he still thinks that it looks dope and looks pretty badass, and he just is humble enough not to say anything about it.
So we've already talked about the scene a little bit earlier, but when he goes and meets Greef Karga, Carl Weathers' character, as soon as he walks into the cantina, just about every bounty hunter stops and turns and looks at him.
Well, yeah, I mean, everybody, he says later in that very scene that, you know, everybody was a part of this bounty. Everybody had, but you were the one who completed the mission and got all the Baskar, so they're fucking jealous of you, and they all hate you because you succeeded.
Yes, and but if he wasn't as, I was going to make the point, if he didn't have such shiny armor, maybe if it was a duller type armor, you know, would everyone turn as dramatically? And yeah, the answer is probably yes, though. So. I revoke that point.
Well, did you notice that they didn't, it wasn't a complete set? Like, they missed, like, one piece of the armor was not with the new Baskar?
Everything should be new besides the helmet and that original shoulder piece that he got from the deposit.
No, his right leg still has his old armor. So his left leg got new armor, so there wasn't enough for the entire set.
No, I don't remember seeing that.
I didn't even notice it until, like, right now, because I'm rewatching episode 3 as we're doing this, and it's like, wait, that's not shiny metal new Baskar armor. That's his old shit that he had on. And it's like, oh, he didn't have enough for everything. But at least he did get a shiny new toy on his, what was the name of it? His new shiny new toy that he got.
The armorer called it the Whistling Birds, and she described it as a weapon to be used against multiple enemies.
Yeah, I mean, when she was kind of putting it together, it almost looked like something from Iron Man. You know, like one of them pieces from Iron Man, the original one where they just shoot out little rockets.
Yeah, out of his arm. Yeah, that's pretty much what they are.
It's like, hey, Tony can do it. You guys can't do better.
Yeah. It's one of it's one of those, what's the best way to look at or to describe it? Like little blow darts, I guess, probably a little thicker, engaging, but they're kind of like little blow darts in his wrist.
I mean, blow darts, yeah, kind of, more like blow missiles.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm just trying to reference the shape. Or like skinny pencils.
Yeah, I guess skinny pencils with the blue luminous tip.
Yeah, which I'm guessing is the explosive.
Probably.
But, you know, we get to see him in action later when, as we were describing, Mando's Moral Compass kicks in. He's like, I can't let these flipping Imperials do whatever they're going to do to this kid. I got to go rescue him. So he goes and he breaks it. Well, he does some espionage. And I only bring this up because he's eavesdropping on the doctor and the client.
Extract the necessary material and be done with it.
He explicitly ordered us to bring it back alive.
Finish your business quickly, as I no longer can guarantee your safety.
And the doctor's insistent that they keep Baby Yoda alive because, as they describe him, he, which I'm guessing is the person they work for, they want him to bring him back.
I wonder who he is.
Ah, that's TBD. Mm. But we also hear the client says, well, extract whatever material you need, because I can no longer protect you. It's like, okay, so seems like stuff's about to go down with these ex-Imperials. That's piqued my interest.
Mm-hmm. Well, I thought it was interesting. The what is it, like the little security thing that pops out?
Yeah, the same one from Jabba's palace. And
yeah, I bet you C-3PO wish that it would be that easy. Just grab and just fucking rip it out of the wall.
Oh yeah, Mando goes ham when he's invading this stronghold.
Oh yeah, he does. I mean, he even uses his flamethrower on a stormtrooper, and there's so much details from it. You can literally hear the guy cooking inside of his armor. It's freaking insane.
Goes back to last episode where we said the directors and producers are they're picking up on everything. Yes.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's great. But in the scene, so after he makes it through some of the stormtroopers, finds Baby Yoda and the doctor, destroys the medical droid, the Imperial medical droid.
He really doesn't like droids.
No. Well, the droid was doing whatever. It was getting ready to pull something out of, maybe take blood, maybe kill Baby Yoda, but the doctor's like, Dr. Pershing's like, please don't hurt me. And Mando's like, what the fuck did you do? He's like, please don't hurt me. This, you know, he wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for me. They would have killed him already.
Right.
And that's where we get it. Baby Yoda's a boy.
Mm-hmm.
And cue the, I've seen it all over the place. There people are trying to figure out where the hell this baby came from. And if you look on the shoulders of the doctor, I haven't seen it yet, even though, I mean, I've seen, he has a patch. But people are saying that this is a Kaminoan. So they're saying this doctor's from Kamino, which is the cloners in the prequel trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
So people think maybe Baby Yoda's a clone of Yoda.
Could be,
And that's the theory. That's not my theory. That's other people's theories. I was like, very interesting.
But I thought the Kaminoans or whatever were like really tall, skinny alien, not humanoid.
Yes, they are. But, you know, if watching Clone Wars, there is some people who come and work with them to kind of help, or, you know, they assist in, like, Jedi Masters go to help train the troops. And so there's more than just that the Kaminoan species working there. But I think if it was the doctor was an actual Kaminoan, it would be a dead giveaway that this is a clone. And to have the patch on it, maybe he's just done work with them. Maybe he interned at the cloning facility.
Right. Yeah, maybe.
So that raises the question. I've seen a theory where it's Baby Yoda's clone, where it's Yoda and Yaddle's clone, or not clone, but baby, which is, as I mentioned in the last episode, Yoda or Yaddle was the other female of Yoda species.
I don't think you mentioned that Yaddle was a female.
I didn't last episode, but that's why I was meticulous to say female, because Yaddle was a female and Yoda was a male, obviously.
Right.
So
I didn't know that. Maybe
there's that theory. Maybe it's their love child, because maybe the species is so rare that the Jedi allow them to
procreate.
Well, I saw there's small tangent, but Ki-Adi Mundi, who is also on the Jedi Council, and for those of you who don't know, he's the one with the really elongated head, usually sits next to Obi-Wan on the council.
Yeah, he died on Kamino, I think, in episode 3.
No, no one died in Kamino, but he was a part of the montage where he was trying to lead an assault. And then
I thought that was on Kamino.
I don't know where it was. I don't think it was Kamino.
Where was? I don't know. Yeah, I may be wrong.
I just know he was crossing a bridge and his guys turned on him and he fought some off. He deflected some of the phaser bolts and died on the bridge. But that's Ki-Adi Mundi.
Well, I remember that from Battlefront 2. Playing as his character on Star Wars Battlefront 2, the OG one, not the new one.
Yeah, but you know the point I was going to make in Legends, because for his species, you know, for humans, male to female ratio is like what, 51-49%, or pretty much 50-50?
Pretty much.
But for his species, it's 20 females for every male.
Damn.
So in Legends, he had several wives and was allowed to reproduce just because there is so few males.
Well, it's nice to know they make exceptions. Yeah, good for him, too. That would be awesome to have like 20 wives. You know what? Now that I think about it, never mind.
No, but that was.
I had to think about that for a second.
That was, yeah, I tried to make it a quick tangent, but that didn't go well. But yeah. But that's just Legends. It's not canon from what I know. So, you know, who knows? Who knows where this baby came from? Maybe he's just an orphan whose parents died somewhere. We'll find out. Hopefully season two
answers a lot of these questions.
Hopefully. And I know it's only going to be 80 episodes, but I hope they're longer than 30 minutes an episode.
Oh, I know, right? That's probably my only thing that I really don't like about these is that they are so short. At least Picard was an hour long.
But the thing is, Picard sometimes was tough to sit through for me.
Well, I think Picard, they just made it too long. If they were going to do the hour, they should have only done like 8 episodes.
Well, yeah. And I think, you know, maybe it's nice that these episodes of Mandalorian are short because it keeps you wanting more.
Right.
It's like, no, come on. Let's
doesn't give you enough episode of Baby Yoda. Doesn't give you your dopamine hit of Baby Yoda.
Yeah. But I mean, that's my only gripe. But at the same time, they do a good job of leaving you hanging and being like, God, I need more Mandalorian.
Mm-hmm.
So is what it is. We spent most of this episode so far talking about the first half of this episode, mainly because the second half of this episode is full of action.
Just, yeah. I mean, it's pretty much just action scenes. Yeah. But it was interesting. I'm not going to lie. You know what? Let's talk about the scene first before I get to that part. So he manages to successfully steal back Baby Yoda. And as he's walking out, trying to walk to his ship, apparently everybody in the guild has now got the bounty out on Mando.
Yeah, they reactivate the tracking fobs.
And then they all stop him. And then Apollo Creed gives his famous speech telling him to, you know, put the child down on the cart and nobody gets hurt.
To throw in the towel. No.
Yeah.
No. And then the Russian takes him out. Oh, wait, wrong series. Wrong franchise.
Yeah, but something about that, him riding on the cart, because he jumps out on the cart, threatens the droid to start driving, and they take off and they start shooting in a firefight. Something about that scene reminded me of Red Dead Redemption. I don't know why, but it literally, as I started watching it, I'm like, man, I feel like playing Red Dead Redemption now. I mean, it was just the most random thought. I don't know if I was just high, but I think it was something about that scene was like, it reminded me of the scene when they're on the riverboat on the Rio Grande and you got, you know, people on both sides of the river shooting at him, trying to, just something about it reminded me of that scene.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I played that game.
Yeah, I know, right?
But I mean, the action scene's great because Mando's like, it's like, it got to be 30 against 1. And he's just disintegrating people out the booty. And it's crazy how, I don't know what he has to switch to turn it from disintegrating machine to just like taser. But it's like, how many functions does that weapon have?
Just obviously, two, I think.
Well, yeah, it's obviously a disintegrator. I wonder if he could change the setting so it didn't quite disintegrate people. It has like this taser stun setting.
And it's pretty tough, you know, metal, because he's using that to deflect like axes in the previous episode from those bounty hunters.
Yeah, and that was my next point, is he almost uses it like a staff to fight.
Yeah, he does. So, I mean, that's a pretty versatile weapon that he's got there.
Yeah, I'm curious to see if there's more functionality that comes out with it, or if it's just that. It might just be that. That might be why he also keeps a blaster as a sidearm.
Could be. That, and it's just, maybe it's just heavy.
I don't know. He throws that thing around like it's nothing.
Yeah, but you can only do that for so long before you get tired.
True, true, true.
Especially with all that armor on.
True.
But yeah, I mean, the man goes crazy on all these bounty hunters, starts taking them out left and right, and then he manages, it looked like he was about to start getting overwhelmed, and then out of nowhere comes the Mandalorians to the rescue.
Yeah, and watching this episode is like, it's like, he has to survive, but maybe he gets captured and has to escape. It's like, so there was different scenarios playing through my head, and not one of them was the Mandalorians coming to the rescue. It was like,
yeah, I didn't really see that one coming either, especially how they talked about the importance of staying in hiding.
Yeah. And, you know, I just thought maybe he was just going to try to shoot his way and make a break for it. And I was like, yeah, that's probably what's going to happen. Nope. About a dozen Mandalorians jetpack their way in. And it was cool. It was a cool entrance because all you see is a rocket coming and exploding on one of the high ground positions that these bounty hunters have. You're like, where did that come from? And then boom, they're all there floating like mothers.
What did you think about the CGI scene with those jetpacks?
It wasn't bad. It could have been better.
Yeah, they were kind of iffy for me. Like they do pretty well with most CGI, but this one wasn't as good as it's been for the, you know, for like it's been for the rest of the other scenes.
Yeah, I agree. There was some, you know, and there's spots in the series where the CGI is just not great. Referencing back to the first episode when they're riding the blurgs.
Yes.
And then while the CGI is not great here, I don't think it takes away from the scene too much because it's still a pretty dope scene to watch all them come in and fight. Even Big Boy Mando has a minigun. He's just sitting there lighting everyone up.
Well, of course, what else is he going to have?
I don't know.
Imagine, remember like the little cricket from Men in Black?
That would be cool.
That would actually be kind of cool, but it'd be funny as hell watching them with it. But they'd all die pretty quickly.
Yeah, in closed captioning, they refer to him as the heavy infantryman or heavy infantry Mando, but I'm just calling him Big Boy Mando. Because he's, like I said, he's a big boy.
Yeah, he is a big boy.
Oh, but did you recognize who voices the Big Boy Mandalorian?
I did not.
Jon Favreau.
Isn't he from isn't he supposed to play Deathstroke on the new Batman series?
No.
Or am I thinking somebody else?
I don't know what you're talking about.
Okay, hang on, what's his name?
Jon Favreau. We talked about him last episode.
I didn't know that was him.
Him and Dave.
Okay, I know who you're talking about. Okay. He's the guy from Iron Man.
He's Happy Hogan.
Yeah.
He directed Iron Man and Iron Man 2. He was happy. He's Happy Hogan in the MCU.
Didn't he create the series too? Mandalorian?
And he's the creator of The Mandalorian and executive producer.
I didn't know that was him.
And he's a voice of another Mandalorian. I think it's of the Vizsla clan. It might be pre-Vizsla. I don't remember off the top of my head. But he's also a voice. He does two or three episodes in the Clone Wars where he's a Mandalorian.
Oh, I didn't know. No, I actually did not recognize him. But I knew he created the show. I just didn't know that. I didn't know that was him. I was thinking of Joe Manganiello.
Manganiello or whatever. No. Two
yeah.
Totally different people.
Well, I mean, I'm thinking big ass guys, and you're like, so I don't know people's names very well, so I'm thinking.
I said voice. That didn't mean he put on the suit.
Oh, well, I mean, he could have.
He could have. Doesn't mean he did.
No. I mean, he is a big boy, just a different kind of big.
Yeah, a little bit, but.
But then again, so were we, so who cares?
Is what it is. Yeah, this episode, Mandalorians come in. Mando's able to get to their ship. But before he does that, he's like, you know.
Apollo Creed's pretty smart.
Huh?
Apollo Creed's pretty smart. He's getting back in the ship, hides in the ship, pops out.
I was going to say, before he gets to the ship, he has a brief conversation with Big Boy Mando where they're like, you know, now we got to relocate the cauldron, which is their stronghold. Did you catch that?
Yes, I did. And you know what his response was?
I almost said I have spoken, but no, it's this is the way. Those are two very, very catchy, you know, one-liners that
I know, right?
That I use every now and then. This is the like, I almost pulled the wrong one out. But yeah,
so now, that's funny.
So now the Mandalorian's got to relocate. So it's curious to see what happens with them.
Yeah, it will be interesting to see what they have to do. And then
you get the scene that you brought up a second ago where Carl Weathers, or Greef Karga, same person, well, character, actor, whatever, sneaks onto Mando's ship because obviously now he's able to escape, and they have a very interesting interaction where Karga explains that, you know, this is the sin that he's committing, is he was asking too many questions, and now he's betraying
the guild.
Bounty Hunters Guild. Yep.
Yeah, and I was complimenting him when watching the episode, like, that's a pretty smart move there. And then Mando shoots off his coil or whatever.
Grappling hook, and then activates the carbonite gas.
Mm-hmm. Gets away, then he just starts randomly shooting, not being able to find him, and Mando just able to take him out. I'm like, yeah, maybe he wasn't that smart.
Yeah, I mean, I was under the impression that being the head of a bounty hunter's guild meant you were probably a bounty hunter at one point. And he's a good shot, because we saw him hit the droid of the little
moving droid thing. But then again,
maybe he's out of practice, maybe, I don't know.
Maybe, but he's just retired.
So quick,
maybe he's just getting too old for this shit.
Here's the thing that I want to bring up is because Mandalorian shot hits him in the Beskar that he had gotten from the client as a part of his payment for the deal.
Right.
Did Mandalorian do that on purpose?
Or maybe it was the Force guiding him, saying, you're going to be needed in the future.
What?
The Force. Maybe it's the will of the Force that he just so happens to get shot in the Beskar, meaning that he'll be needed again later down the series.
Well, yes, but I'm thinking,
like luck. Maybe it wasn't luck. You know, maybe Mando didn't know that it was still in his pocket.
Well, that's just
trying to kill him.
But he knew it was there because when they were back at the cantina a few scenes or earlier in the episode, Karga did whip it out and be like, hey, I also am very wealthy. They also pay me in Beskar steel, and then slides it back in that pocket. And then you figure, because there's not a lot of time that happens with the kidnapping and the interactions with and the fights and everything, there's a good chance he still has it in his pocket. So I'm thinking Mandalorian ain't there on purpose just to get him off the ship, but might be considered a friend or a mentor, so it didn't want to kill him.
It could be, but I mean, that's still a pretty tough shot. I mean, you did have the carbonite gas blowing in your way. You know, you did have a split second to make the shot, and that Beskar steel was not very big. It's about 3/4 of the size of a dollar bill.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it's relatively small. So if you miss, then you're going to kill the guy.
Yeah, but I'm thinking he didn't want to kill him. He just wanted him off his ship.
It could be. But that's still a tough shot. So, I mean, he could be. If it isn't, he's one hell of a shot, which we do know that he's an incredible shot. Or, again, that's just a possible theory. Maybe it was the will of the Force moving through Mandalore to, maybe it wasn't luck. Maybe it's their way of saying you're going to be needed again in the future.
Maybe.
Maybe so. The Force moves in mysterious ways.
Yep.
And then it ends the way the last episode should have, to where Baby Yoda reaches up to try and grab the ball again, and Mando hands it to him.
Yep.
The way it should. Ah, I love Baby Yoda.
Yeah, he's a nice little subtle humor we get from him.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say, what was your overall opinion of the episode? But I think we've already given a good breakdown of our opinion of this episode.
Yeah, so we'll just do a quick wrap-up thoughts.
Oh, okay, I guess I'll go first. Well, first of all, this episode's it's going to be great no matter what because Baby Yoda's in it. So, but it's really good action scenes, really great directing. Again, more little attention to detail. CGI was spotty in some areas, but, you know, it wasn't bad. It was still decent, it just wasn't great, you know. But, I thought the episode was another great episode of The Mandalorian, and I see why it did as well as it did. And it just got so much hype, and it was hype well worth it. I mean, it really was.
Yeah.
Or it lived it up to the hype.
Yeah, it's safe to say that The Mandalorian's off to a fantastic start. And first three episodes are all very good episodes. I wish they were a tad longer because, you know, it has me wanting more. But unfortunately, that's the runtime they came up with. So that's what it is. Hopefully season 2, what I would like to see is, you know, so longer runtimes. I would like to plop down for 45 to 50 minutes and watch an episode instead of 28. And I'm talking, when I say 45 to 50 minutes, that's excluding the recaps, excluding any intros, excluding any credits, just 45 to 50 minutes of story.
Right.
It's my only gripe. It's the only gripe of the series I have so far.
It's not long enough, pretty much.
Yep. I want more.
Shall we punch it?
Punch it, we can beat him.
Punch it,
kill it.
Punch it.
Punch it!
Punch it!
Punch it, Huxley! Punch it! Let's get the hell out of here.
Let's punch it.
Well, since you want more, what do we got in store for next week's episode, brother?
Next week's episode is episode 4, or I guess it's technically chapter 4, The Sanctuary.
Yes.
This is a interesting episode. I know it's been a while since we've watched it, but we see some new characters. And if I remember right, it's directed by, is it Bryce Dallas Howard?
Bryce Dallas Howard. The description for the episode is, the Mandalorian teams up with an ex-soldier to protect a village from raiders. And that's pretty good. That's a pretty good description for the next episode.
I just realized in the first two episodes that we've done in The Mandalorian, we didn't really read the description from Disney Plus.
No,
like
we didn't.
We did with Picard. Ah, well, shit happens.
Ah, well. Yeah, well, I guess that will do it for this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening to Deep Space High, and be sure to join us next week as we continue our discussion on The Mandalorian.
Don't forget to keep the conversation going over on Twitter with hashtag Deep Space High.
And be sure to let us know how we're doing by reviewing Deep Space High on Apple Podcasts. And if you like what you hear, please feel free to subscribe and share our show. I'm Sky Marshall Chris.
You know what I realized?
What did you realize?
We haven't came up with a separate Star Wars hashtag yet.
No, we have not.
We need to work on that. That's our goal by the time next episode comes out. Okay, so to wrap this episode, I'm Jedi Master Steve. And may the Force be with you.